Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Molly and Henley, up early to start your day with Chicago Sports Talk.
We live. We sing karaoke. We do a lot of cool things together.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
Did NBA Commissioner Adam Silver bazooka the Bulls tank?
Yes, Adam Silver definitely bazooka'd the Bulls tank. But the very fact, Justin Holiday, look at his shooting night. He ruined everything. Not only did he come out and play, but he knocked down shot after shot.
He got them all.
December really bazooka'd the tank. Nico guaranteeing wins and following through with the 7-game win streak.
The best part about that question is the word bazooka.
I see what you did there.
I'm not familiar with military artillery.
Mully and Henley.
What the hell's going on in this show?
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Bases loaded, two down here at the bottom of the 8th. Breaking ball hit high and deep to left. Back goes Kibblehan, still going back, looking up, and it is gone! A grand slam for Luis Robert, and the White Sox, on the extra point, lead 14-12 over the Reds.
How about that for your first spring start? And they're all the way for Luis Robert. Got a hooker and just buried it out there.
Talking about a curveball there, wasn't he? Uncle Charlie? What?
Got a hooker and just buried it out there.
Okay. All right. Let's clarify.
Wow.
You don't want to bury any hookers.
Is this the Godfather?
I don't know. And I don't understand why. I can't remember.
You don't have to remember. Just do as I say. They're putting a call into your office. Explain that you'll be there tomorrow afternoon. Decided to spend the night at Michael Corleone's house in Tahoe as his guest.
What's up, Chicago?
Mully and Henley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. I'd be very curious to see if The Godfather holds up. I haven't seen it in a number of years. And I told you, I think that a lot of that stuff has become so kind of don't want to say overused, but so used that it's kind of cliche. And when it came out, it was the first of its kind. So always curious to see how things hold up. Some things, wine and cheese age with great grace. Some movies age with grace. Some movies you can watch forever. And other things get old and tired and useless. Just life. Some things work and some things don't.
Haven't seen The Godfather or Godfather 2 for a long time, but it used to be one of those where you landed on it and you stuck with it.
Yeah.
And you were happy that you did. And you're right. Some movies you thought were hysterical as comedies, you know, back in the day, or you're like, wow, not so good. Yeah. Not so good.
What was I thinking?
Yeah.
But other things are good. Yeah, it's just the way life works. Again, I've got some wine that I picked up in 1997 because it was supposed to be a great year for Napa Valley, cabs. So I've got some of those. And, boy, they're probably drinkers now, right? I mean, you pretty much have to get to them. Problem is getting the bottle open.
Feel free. Bring it in. I'll open it up.
Really? What do you do? Yeah. You just crack the top open?
No, he just heard free wine. He just heard free good wine.
Yeah, that's good wine. I mean, it's, you know,
you know how it is.
You might want to give it a minute to let it breathe.
I got one of them things at home. You pour it in and let it breathe.
Yeah, I've got one of those things too, but I'm just saying.
A glass?
No, it's like a decanter.
Oh.
Yeah. Decanter.
I've got some Velveeta from my Y2K kit that I think is holding up pretty well. I can open that up.
That will last forever, right?
Yeah.
There are certain, and aren't there certain canned goods that will last for a very long time?
Sam?
And your Twinkie, Dustin?
You can get wine.
You nailed to the wall. Dustin told us that he'd never eaten a Twinkie. So they were supposedly going out of style. Didn't they come back?
Out of business, right?
Well, allegedly. But we bought him one out of the vending machine, and he hammered it into the wall, I think, like two stops ago. Was that upstairs, or was that the other building?
Yeah, it might still be on that wall.
It could still be there.
The box that we never really emptied out. We've been here like 5 years. We still haven't unpacked.
Yeah. Well, eventually we will. How long have we been here?
About 5 years.
Have we really? That's crazy.
On this floor?
We just got some mail
five
from them.
5 years? No. I've been working here for five years.
No, 2 years maybe. Maybe.
I think two.
We just
over two.
We just got a Blackhawks Christmas card from 5 years ago. Delivered to the office.
Yeah, the mail is never delivered, and we got our Christmas cards from the Blackhawks.
So we want to thank mailbox is on 10.
Uh-huh. Mailbox is on 10.
We want to thank the Blackhawks for the holiday card.
We're on 9. Yeah. And the idea going up to get the mail apparently didn't work. So
last week we got the holiday card, the Christmas card from the staff of the Hawks. Thank you for thinking of us.
Bless
you. I was a little offended. I thought we didn't make the cut, but we're back in. So you heard there the grand slam from Luis Robert. Again, another one of the young Sox players who's not going to make the roster, but it's just good to see a guy be able to make contact and do something. It hints at what you're looking for in the future. And it was a ridiculous game, 14-12 against the Reds. Yoan Moncada 3-for-3 with a double in that leadoff spot, and of course Sanchez and Davidson homer, and Kopech throws today, so it'd be great to go see that. James Shields starts the other game. They got the old the split squad doubleheader, and Kopech at one game, James Shields at the other. You got both guys facing the Rangers again. The old split squad. If you had a chance, do you want to go see James Shields try to recapture glory because you know he's the opening day starter, or would you go see Michael Kopech actually throw a ball through a wall? I'll take Kopech as the answer to that one. The Cubs, three homers, Elmora Jr. and Schwarber part of that, and they win 11-6 over the Indians. And Quintana gave up a home run and committed an error, allowing three hits and 2 1/3 innings of work. And Tyler Chatwood goes today against the Padres.
In the King of Spring, Ian Happ getting pitched around. He took a walk and got hit. So apparently the book's out on Ian Happ. They're not giving him anything. They're okay. Here's your first base. I'll drill you with one.
It's spring training. Let's get into the practice of not letting Happy beat you.
That's right. Happy's going to be good here. There's four pitches go over there.
Mm-hmm. How good? How good is Happy? You got to be pleased with him.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But how good will he be?
Well, how much is Joe going to use him?
Well, this is
and where is he going to use
the
him?
Dilemma. This is the problem, and the idea that we're going to throw him at second base every once in a while, but boy, you know, he better play a better center field. It's just kind of insane, isn't it?
Yeah, I like it. I think it plays.
I saw Joe being interviewed by Comcast, and he was kind of talking about some of his theories and some of the things he likes to do to take the pressure off the guys and why he does it. It's interesting stuff. He's really, you know, he's been at it a long time, and there is a philosophy behind everything that he's doing, including, you know, coming up with sort of a theme for the year.
Yeah, I saw him on the NBC Sports. Mm-hmm.
That's what I meant.
He was going through the Einstein thing. That took like 30 minutes. He's reading the margins, and this mm-hmm. means that, and here you'll put your ego in your pocket. And I mean, I thought
Einstein didn't bother with that sort of thing. I thought Einstein wore the same clothes every day because he didn't want to think about kind of the drudgery stuff in life. He wanted to be able to free his mind to the point where he could think about the world and things that mattered and physics and science.
He didn't come up with the skinny suit trip.
No.
This has got to be on a shirt at some point.
And Joe talked for a while also about how a guy dresses and how he looks and how that's nobody's business, and he wants guys to come in and feel comfortable. That apparently applies to himself. I think that when you read between the lines of what he's saying, he didn't like people kind of wondering why he's dyeing his hair and all that stuff. And you know, again, he's going for a certain look, and he wants to probably be a little bit younger than he is. And you know, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. He wants to relate to players, So you dress like you're in a biker gang and you dye your hair and people like that. I'm totally serious. Isn't that what he's doing? Doesn't he kind of shop at the Rockstar? You know, isn't that kind of a very cash but, you know, sporty type look?
Yeah. And then he was.
Why did you roll your eyes, Dustin? What is it?
I just think there's a different interpretation. I do think he's playing some of us. I think he shaves his head every year. He can say all he wants that the wife likes the hair a little darker and that he likes the hair a little darker. It's all to call attention to the hair that he then shaves off every year at spring training to raise money. That's what I think this is about. I don't think this is about
his ego.
I don't think this has anything to do with ego. I think this is all charitable driven work that he's doing.
Including the way he dresses and everything?
Not the way he dresses, no. Not the way he dresses.
But, I mean, the hair fits the
hair thing.
Look.
The hair thing is all about the charity.
Well, no, you can shave white hair and get the same amount of attention and everything.
But when you dye it and you keep – see, it's like anything – it's like, you know, Molly, you brought up at the beginning of this hour after we played the Open, like, questioning. It's a good question. Does the Godfather still hold up?
Yeah.
Well, if you shave your white hair every year at spring training, after 3 or 4 or 5 years of doing that – does it hold up anymore? But now we're going to shave the dark hair, and we're constantly talking because the Cubs are so good. We're talking about Joe's hair. That's the spring training story is Joe's hair. Well, that's the idea. Shave your hair, spend some money on charity. It keeps it going.
So next year is going to be a different color.
Maybe he'll do a ponytail next year, Brian. How the heck do I know?
It's hard to grow your hair in the course of 1 year when you're 60 something years old, right? I'm just saying, to get a ponytail, he gets a military crew cut. How long before it comes back?
By June, he's got the full head of hair that you'll notice that's dyed, and we'll have thoughts on
it. He can get the transplant like Urlacher and Rhino.
Did Rhino get one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought, and I'd like to know more about it. I just thought you had to keep doing it. It just seems like the maintenance for the transplant is a lot worse than I imagined, and I only know that from Joe Buck. Talking about he's had 8 different hair plugs put in. Is that right? 8 times he's had to go to?
Yeah, 8 procedures, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 8 procedures, and the 7th or 8th one was the one that he damaged a vocal cord?
Right.
So because they put the tube down there?
Vanity is a thing.
Okay. 312, just not for Joe.
Yeah.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Molly and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670 of the school.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Here's my thing. Players Association needs to be involved in this. Players Association. And I've talked to Michelle about it. Do a combine for juniors. Take 100 of them. Tell the ones that need to go to college, you need to go to school. You 15 or 12, you need to go directly to the NBA. But let them know. The Players Association can do it. Are you ready for this? You decide to go to college. Let the Players Association give these families loans so that they can travel with their teams. If they choose to move to a town where their son is going to play, they can take a loan and do it. Instead of having families move to towns, how the heck did they get there? Let that be legal. In this country that we're in, when you have nothing, you ready? You can't get anything. You can't get a Coke, a hamburger, a quarter. When you have everything you need, I need nothing. They give me cars. They give me clothes. I never pay for a meal. We got this backwards.
Molly and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of John Calipari. He, of course, the Kentucky head coach who has benefited from one-and-done culture, but says enough is enough. And his solution to fixing the issues with the NCAA, he gave you a little bit of it there, a very passionate response on the Dan Patrick Show.
It's a variation of what we were talking about a couple weeks ago with Mike DeCourcy. If agents want to front a loan to guys that they have identified as future clients and guys who will pay them back because they can't miss NBA guys, why would you have an issue with it if, in fact, it's a loan, right? Whether it's no interest loan or not, but the money is going to be repaid at some point, or that agent's taking the risk that it's not going to be repaid.
Well, that's it.
Well, that, I mean, but that's on the agent. So, I mean, as long as everyone knows what's going on and that it's above board, and, you know, whether they're the agent believes that guy's going to be a client in years to come or is at least going to get his money back. You know, John Calipari interested to have some sort of combine where you identify 12 guys who are NBA ready, and, you know, 30 have to go back to school and never see the NBA, and what happens to that group in the middle, you know, that could be, maybe, might be someday an NBA player. You know, how do they go to the G League? Do they just continue on in a college for more than 1 year? They're not one and done guys.
That's it's a difficult question to answer. And obviously they've, you know, logic doesn't seem to work. You know, I would pay kids in the revenue earning sports because they're the ones that are earning the revenue that are basically lifting the rest of the program. So I would not hesitate to make sure that kids got something in return for, you know, more than just their education. I don't have any problem with the idea of paying players. Wouldn't bother me whatsoever. I think football players and basketball players bring in revenue to the school. And if you came up with some kind of stipend system, you know, I think the problem is that what he's talking about there is accurate. There are, you know, 20, 25 players that you can identify. And of that group, what, you got 7, 8 that actually are worth anything, that will be more than journeyman players? So,
yeah.
You know, let the agents foot the bill, hoping to catch one.
Yeah, I mean, that, and take serious money when you hear John Calipari talking about moving a family to a university for a year, even, you know, buy a house. You know, everyone comes, the parents come, they get to travel to the away games. You know, that's a substantial amount of money.
312-644-6767. Let's start with Jim. Jim's in Aurora. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning, guys. Love the show.
Bless you.
I just wanted to get your opinion on something that I've thought about for a while, but just now got a chance to verbalize it, hearing your commentary about Joe Madden's hair and stuff like that.
Wear
uniforms like players, and that doesn't happen in the NBA. It doesn't happen in the NFL. I'm just wondering why that is, because it just kind of looks ridiculous to see, you know, 50-plus-year-old guys running out there with baseball uniforms.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier, and, you know, part of the reason the people dress the way they dress off the field is because of the way they dress on the field. They're kind of in sweats all the time and comfortable doing that. I think with Joe, you know, we're not criticizing Joe. We're talking about what Joe was saying about how people need to be comfortable and coming in and what they wear and all that. And Dustin has an interesting theory that Joe has dyed his hair in order to bring attention to his hair, because he's going to be shaving it off, and the only way to keep it, you know, I don't know that I buy that, but it's an interesting idea. You know, again, maybe Joe dresses very casually because of the way that he is used to wearing sweats. I don't know, but I think, you know, I go back to the NFL, and, you know, you look at the hoodie. That's fine. You can wear the hoodie because it's, you know, basically it says Patriots on it. But Mike Nolan, when he was head coach out in San Francisco, wanted to pay tribute to his father by wearing a suit, and he was told, no, you can't wear a suit. You can't, pay tribute to your father because we need to sell apparel, and you have to have something with – so they couldn't even come up with a suit with a team logo on it to satisfy them, maybe – put, you know, Niners on the jacket breast. I mean, I don't know. And then the NFL could try selling, you know, sports shirts or, you know, who knows. But no, he wasn't allowed to do that. So I have no problem with people trying to dress age appropriate. I don't think there's anything, you know, I think when you hit 50 years old, you should dress like a grown man. I don't know that you need to.
Listen, I'm not by any means a snob.
Yeah, that's not a shot at Joe. I'm just saying, you know, just general life rule, but there are people that don't want to do it. There are people that have a hard time aging. There are people that go to great lengths to, you know, get their hair fixed up, get their teeth, you know, going to look like they are significantly younger than they are. And, you know, I can understand that too. I think there's a whole kind of, you know, if you can find the fountain of youth, go ahead and find it.
I mean, Joe's vernacular is
HGH. I mean, go ahead and HGH it.
The word choice Joe uses on a daily basis tells you that he's forever young, right?
Yes, I mean, he's very hip and he's very kind of, for a guy that can communicate the way that Joe can, he likes to give you the dude and the man and the whole, you know, he just likes to
Did you read the Mona Lisa?
I didn't read it. But I did see it. I actually went to France to see it. But that's not the one with all the little sayings.
Not the crumpled up one that they sell at the gift shop.
312-644-6767. Let's get Ray. Ray's in Orland Park. Hi, Ray.
Good morning, gentlemen. As much as I love a good hair story, I had an NBA thought for you. I like what John Calipari said regarding the players, but I was wanted to chime in about tanking because I know you were talking about that yesterday. Mm. Here's a thought, just a crazy idea how to fix it. What if the first pick was given to the 8th seed in the playoffs, awarding a team that's trying to get close?
Wouldn't everybody on the verge of the playoffs then be trying to get the number one pick in the draft? Wouldn't every team, you know, that was on the verge?
But it's also, but you're at least trying to win and trying to get into the playoffs rather than bottoming out and losing and having half the lose. I'd rather have half the league compete for playoff spots, then you can reward 8 and then 7's 2 or 9, or that's how the lottery works. I just feel like you reward the middle rather than reward the bottom.
And I'm not arguing with you, Ray, but the thing is, the whole concept of a draft, the reason they have it that way is because they want you to be able to compete. And so the worst team gets the first pick, presumably to help them. The problem is when you get to years where the worst team is taking the first pick over and over again, and it's like Elgin Baylor at the old draft lottery with the Clippers, where they just every year
he had a chair with his name on it.
Yeah, every year they were there, and every year they were taking a shot, and every year they were back the next year. It's just
he's like the regular at the bar. Yeah, that's Elgin's seat. Hold on, you can't sit there. He'll be here.
Let's get to Joe with a scoreboard update.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I'm trying to do my job, and, you know, we're all men in here. You know, if I got to be the bad guy, you know, that's, you know, I have no problem doing. They know I don't have no bad intentions, you know, when I'm talking to my teammates. I'm just trying to, you know, trying to go out there and compete and win. And I think, you know, everybody trying to do the same thing as me, so I don't think they take as, you know, me, you know, trying to yell and, you know, get everybody in the right position as, you know, criticism.
Mullion Hanley, that is the voice of Chris Dunn, and he's going to play the bad guy if that is what is expected of him. Interesting. Let's bring in Vincent Goodwill. He covers the Bulls for NBC Sports Chicago. And Vincent, you wrote about this. The upcoming the conflict that is inevitable, the sort of tug of war that's going to happen between Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn. Good morning, Vincent. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
I find it really interesting, and I think that ultimately, you know, once again, we're going to have to talk about Fred as a guy that needs to intercede if indeed there is this sort of conflict going on. It's been put off, postponed for a night because everybody got together, everybody did it right, and obviously everybody scored and there were assists and the ball was moving and they were playing a terrible team. What's your takeaway from one game like that? Does this mean that it will work, or do you still feel that that there is a storm brewing?
Well, just because that I believe that there's a possibility that something could happen down the line doesn't mean that it's not going to work. You know, I think conflict is natural, and I think it's healthy. I think if you look at any successful team in its history, you know, even someone as non-offensive as Stephen Curry in Golden State, I'm quite sure he's had some tense moments in the locker room, even before, you know, Kevin Durant got there. When you're ascending and you're ascending at the same time, in some ways it helps because there is no designated hierarchy. And in some ways, it's going to create some of these situations because people naturally see an opening for leadership, and they see an opening for their game to go to the next level. So sometimes for you to take a step forward, someone has to take a step back, or at least there has to be an acknowledgement that there is going to be steps taken. And I think that's sort of a natural, healthy sort of thing that can happen. And last night, you've seen that it could work. All guys scored 20 for the first time. You know, everybody made plays in the clutch down the stretch, albeit being against a team like the Memphis Grizzlies. But it's less about what happens on the floor, and to me it's more about everybody sort of being able to respect each other's space while growing into the players that they're going to mature into.
And that said, when you look at this thing, Vincent, Zach LaVine, I mean, he talks about how he wants to be the guy, and Chris Dunn, when he's asked about it, said, well, I wanted to let my play lead and lead the way, and then eventually I could be more vocal, but I didn't want to come in here and step on guys' toes. Do their personalities lend themselves to one being the alpha? I mean, it sounds like Fred saying, hey, you've got the ball in your hands. You're going to have to be that guy, Chris. But it sounds like Zach's like, I'll do it right now.
Yeah, I think the position that Chris plays puts him in a natural spot of having to be one to be a leader, to be a leader, not necessarily the sole leader, because there are certain situations where, you know, a point guard can just sort of lead by example or be a vocal leader but not be viewed as the guy, so to speak, but just being viewed as someone who's in a position, you know, of leadership, just like a quarterback, just like a middle linebacker. Those are certain people who you're going to expect to control certain situations, even if they aren't the catalyst. And I think that's sort of a, I won't say a tricky situation, but I think there can be multiple leaders in multiple ways. And you got to think, Chris Dunn was in a situation last year where he didn't play, and he was a rookie and a top five pick. So he couldn't come in here and automatically start dictating. He had to figure out who he was as a ball player. He had to have some equity behind his name as someone who could perform at this level. And Zach LaVine being a player who was the centerpiece of the Jimmy Butler trade. You know, of course he was damaged goods. You know, he's come off the ACL and everything else, but he was the main piece in that deal from a performance standpoint. So he felt natural to say, you know what, I'm going to be a leader here. And I don't think either guy is wrong. I don't think either guy intends to step on anybody's toes, and I don't think there is like a dislike or anything like that. I just think it's two young guys, including Larry Markin, who I think has the most potential, is young guys who are going to feel themselves, you know, growing over the next year. I don't think it's going to happen anytime now. I think it's going to be basically next year where guys are starting to grow and the team is going to get better, and then you're going to start seeing these positions of natural conflict.
Is Adam Silver out of line telling the Bulls who to play? Did he give them a minutes limit? Did he tell them how many points he wanted from each guy? I don't know.
Here's the thing. Sometimes, put it like this. There was an old story. I once talked to the late Chuck Daly about this back when I was really, really young. And he said, when I wanted to yell at Isaiah Thomas, I yelled at John Sally because Sally could take it. But Isaiah was the one who got the picture, even though I was yelling at Sally. I think that was a message to the rest of the NBA.
Right.
Like, it's 20 games left. Everybody's being in the super bad category. Let's not get cute here. And so I don't think the Bulls were so much like the direct target, although I do think that a team – one of these eight teams that are below the Bulls in the lottery standings, well, above the Bulls, obviously, look at it. I think one of those teams said, look at what the Bulls are doing. They're better than we are, and let's not let them compromise this, you know, for the purpose of getting the best of both worlds. And the NBA having to look at the optics of the situation, they don't like the optics of a team purposely trying to tank when they're a little bit further ahead than some of the other franchises. That's what they had to do, along with telling the other seven teams or the eight, nine, ten teams, you know, in the lottery standings, don't get any crazy ideas here.
The Zach LaVine is going to be restricted this summer, right? Is it a slam dunk?
Yes.
Slam dunk? That just because of what they gave up and what they believe him to be, that does he get a max contract right out of the gate?
I'm certain you guys have been in this town longer than I have. Do you think Jerry Reinsdorf operates like that?
Well, let me rephrase. Does Zach and his agent believe that he should get a max contract right out of the gate?
I'm sure there's a level of expectation from his side, and I do think when you make a trade like this, when the Bulls made this trade, and they knew that Zach LaVine was coming off of ACL, and they knew that he was coming up on restricted free agency a year later, and they knew that from their own experience that ACLs take a long period of time to come back from with their own experience. I think when you make that trade, guys, you tacitly make a decision that as long as this guy's walking and reasonably healthy, we're going to pay him. Now, is he going to get 4 years, $100 million? We'll find another team basically saying, hey, we'll offer you the same thing. I don't know about that, but that's why I think that Zach's free agency could have potential to be a little tricky here, because nobody has money aside from the Bulls. A lot of other teams have their caps tied up. So it's not like Zach can just go to five or six teams and say, hey, Chicago, these teams are all going to pay me, so you guys have to max me out. And I don't think the Bulls are just going to pay Zach just off of GP either. So I think it has potential to be tricky. I do think they'll get a deal done. It's just a matter of, is it going to be July 1st or, September 1st?
It's interesting when we talk about it in that context, because we talk about the, upcoming storm and the potential for conflict. And, psychologists will tell you that when families get together, people fall into the same old roles, and it's very hard to break out of those roles. Uh-huh. And Zach is the franchise player, for lack of a better term. And Chris Dunn is the guy that was kind of the little brother of the guy that, regardless of age, came in later, didn't play. Zach's the better player. How do you break out of that? And is that an issue that Chris Dunn's going to have to deal with, or is it Fred Hoiberg that ought to be dealing with it?
Well, I think when you talk about, and we've all been in certain situations, we all have certain roles, and not necessarily a family, but just say a circle of friends, that you guys, I'm sure it's been a long time, maybe 5 years or so since you guys have graduated high school. You guys seem fairly young. When you get back together with your old circle of friends, I don't care how successful you are, when you see them again, you fall right back into whatever that first impression that you were or that people had of you, no matter what you've done. And I don't know if that's something that can be broken by a coach. Here's why I think Fred Hoiberg can help this situation, because it's still maturing and evolving. I still think the first impressions are still being made to a large degree. Next year in training camp, roles are going to have to be defined. Hey, you're the feature. Hey, Zach, you're the feature guy. Lowry, you're the feature guy. Chris, you're the floor general. And everything else corresponds from that role to where they won't necessarily always have to intersect. Now, is Fred the type of coach to have those type of direct conversations in front of everyone? I haven't seen evidence that he is, but that's not to say that this year he hasn't grown. And I will say that you give someone a chance, even as a coach, to grow, mature, and learn and stop things before they start. But I do think that part of this is responsibility of a head coach and a coaching staff in the front office to determine these roles, especially with this type of franchise where you had a player in Jimmy Butler go from being a little brother to big brother, and how that seemed to rub people the wrong way. That should be a cautionary tale, basically, even though I had no problem with the way Jimmy did things, basically, because I felt like he earned the right to do them. They had a problem with it. So if you want to learn from that situation, you need to basically cut it off, before it develops, by assigning roles in training camp next year when you see what type of players guys have developed into.
And whatever contract Zach gets, it's going to be a big one. Will that help embolden him into believing that, like you said, you might think, okay, you're the feature player, but he's got the paper now. It's going to be a couple of years out before Chris Dunn sees anything close to that, if he does. So now, is that balancing act when you know that the highest paid player on the team has a stronger personality than the floor general?
Well, hey, money is validation. And I don't think that Zach has an offensive personality. He's actually pretty laid back, just from dealing with him. And, he's very jovial. His dad has a very strong personality. So Zach has always been the person to sort of fill in the blanks, so to speak, in a good way. Like he can read a situation and he can sort of be able to understand what you want, understand what's necessary. He's not someone who's going to try to be offensive to anyone. I think he's more, I want to call him a people pleaser, because I think that's a very strong, you know, phrase, so to speak. But I think Zach is pretty easy to get along with, and I don't think a contract is necessarily going to have him walking in next year, you know, wearing the sunglasses when it's dark outside and saying, hey, I'm the guy or anything. I think he's naturally inclusive, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think Chris Dunn is a little more straightforward. I think he's naturally more straightforward. I just think we've always wanted him to be able to take that step forward as a leader because he's been in that position. But you got to understand, you know, you can't do that unless you're producing. So he couldn't come in this season having nothing to his name and start being like that. So even with Zach sort of having the pedigree that he has, you know, I don't think it's going to be necessarily anything off-putting. It's just a matter of how do these two guys sort of fit around each other, like, you know, pieces to a puzzle, basically.
Great stuff, Vincent. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Very interesting stuff there. Really, the dynamics of a team and how you get there and how the guys respond to it and the hierarchy. It's difficult stuff. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk to Clark Kellogg. We'll talk some NCAA tournament. We'll ask him if he likes the changes and if he is on board with everything they're doing. And basically, I'll get a chance to talk Loyola Ramblers. Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.